Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of my good evening. Welcome to Monday's update here on Manx Radio, taking you through some of the main news in the next half hour. Coming up, what's in Manx Care's operating plan for the next year? We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. Also tonight, as tensions continue to rise in the Middle East, we speak to a Manxman living out there to find out what life is like on the ground currently. We'll also bring you the latest from today's planning hearing over the long vacant site on Lord Street. What could it mean for the area's future? And a local music duo is celebrating because one of their early singles has found a whole new audience and unexpected renewed success. All that will have the weather, the traffic and the travel as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email studio@manxradio.com. We'll start first with a roundup of the day's main news headlines with Dave Moore. Fast to my.
Plans for a 12-storey multi-purpose facility on the site of the former Lord Street bus station in Douglas have moved a step closer. It's after the planning committee voted to disagree with a report recommending the application be refused. Douglas Council leader Devon Watson says its new social housing development in Willesden is everything they want to achieve in one building. The local authority has spent £11 million on the new apartment block, which has 48 flats and will take roughly 88 people off its waiting list.
There's a lot of people living in absolutely dire conditions. A lot of people live in rending poverty. And one of the things we can do is, A, we can eliminate long-term poverty by giving people housing security, and B, getting families off that waiting list and getting them into homes that they need is absolutely vital importance.
Manx Cares published its operating plan for 2026-27. The document sets out in detail how it will deliver the services, improvements and performance expectations outlined in the Department of Health and Social Care's mandate for the year ahead. Elsewhere, the UK Prime Minister has defended the decision not to join US strikes on Iran following criticism from Donald Trump. The US President says he's disappointed Sir Keir Starmer took far too long to change his mind to allow his military to use British bases. The Prime Minister told the Commons it's in the UK's interests. And a man's been arrested over a disturbance in Edinburgh in which two people were injured. Armed police were called to the Calder area this morning. Those are the update news headlines. The next bulletin is at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Dave. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. So first of all, there is a yellow weather warning for ice that comes into effect at 11 p.m. It's until 9 tomorrow morning. That's because there are going to be clear skies overnight, so temperatures around 1 or 2 Celsius in places sheltered from the light winds. So that will be cold enough for a slight frost to develop in prone locations. Generally then, dry this evening and overnight. It is going to be cold, dry with lengthy spells of sunshine tomorrow morning and light winds tomorrow as well. Top temperatures around 10. And just looking ahead to Wednesday, a little bit more cloud around. The odd spot of rain possibly, and top temperatures on Wednesday, 10 as well.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674 573 or visit the showroom on the Snugbra Trading Estate.
It's 3.5 minutes past five. So, as we've just heard, Manx Care has this afternoon published its operating plan for the next year, setting out in detail how it will deliver the services, improvements and performance expectations outlined in the Department of Health and Social Care's mandate to Manx Care for 26-27. Now, the DHSC has published the mandate document, and this sets out services that you, the public, should expect to access, alongside clear expectations around quality, governance, financial control and performance. Manx Care's operating plan forms the organisation's formal response, translating those requirements into a clear programme of delivery across health and social care and also mental health services as well. Well, Siobhan's been taking a look at this and joins me now. And I guess, first of all, Siobhan, would you just tell us what the key priorities are in this document?
Well, Manx Care has outlined five. So they are safe, timely and effective care, governance, compliance and financial accountability, a one-system approach to fully integrated health and social care, early intervention, prevention and childhood experience, and older adults and community-based care. Now, the healthcare body says a home-first approach remains central to the plan, which supports basically people to live independently at home for as long as possible. You might remember this was the focus last year. It means prioritising care delivered in people's homes and local communities wherever clinically appropriate, whilst also ensuring hospital services are available when needed.
So how is Manx Care going to achieve that home-first approach then?
Well, Manx Care says its operating plan this year places a strong focus on prevention and early intervention across all areas of service delivery. This includes things like targeted work within children and families' social care to support vulnerable children and young people to build strong foundations and make positive life choices. It also says that the plan reinforces its commitment to working as part of a single system, working to improve the health of the people living here on the Isle of Man. This includes close partnership with the likes of public health, ensuring that prevention and early intervention activity is evidence-based and aligned with the island's population health needs.
Thank you very much indeed, Siobhan. Well, this operating plan for 2026-27 is going to be laid before Tynwald alongside the mandate this month that is in line with the requirements of the Manx Care Act. It's just gone 5 past 5. Well, plans for a 12-storey multi-purpose facility on the site of the former Lord Street bus station have moved a step closer today. This is after the planning committee voted to disagree with a report that recommended the application should be refused. Chair of the committee, Rob Callister, MHK, had the deciding vote after the panel was split 3 in favour and 3 against. These plans, as we know, include a multi-screen cinema, bus facilities and 85 apartments. This report, considered by the committee, recommended the project be refused because of concerns over a lack of affordable housing being included in them. So a list now of conditions are going to be considered by the committee at its next sitting before it decides whether or not to actually grant planning permission. Well, residents in Douglas seem hopeful that planning approval will be granted. These people have been telling us what they think.
Well, what's something doing with it, doesn't it? It's just a bit of an eyesore when you come off the boat. I don't know why they got rid of that lovely Art Nouveau bus station in the first place. Put that back, I say. I want something doing because it's horrible, isn't it? I'm sure it'll do well, but, you know, you're going to need parking spaces down here, aren't you? Because people are scrambling for them, especially now that this is not used as a Wild West parking spot. So, yeah, I don't know. It wants something doing anyway.
It would be good for the people on the Isle of Man, which is what everyone needs, a new building on the Isle of Man, because of all the buildings that are on here are more or less been here for ages, and with the new building that they potentially are going to build, hopefully it'll go well with the planning permission, and hopefully the government will give the green light to do the planning for it. There's not that much to do for anyone on the island, and there's only about 2 cinemas on the Isle of Man, which is the Palace Cinema and the Villa Marina. So it'll be nice to have more cinemas and more entertainment for the public on the Isle of Man.
Not really. I don't think we need another cinema because I don't think the cinemas that we have are really used enough. And I think we have plenty of office space. I think really it would be better used as a car park or maybe a bus station.
Well, they need to do something with it because it looks a mess at the moment, and it's been a mess for a while. It was better when they used it as a car park.
That's some of the views that you have on the Lord Street development. Of course, we'll be keeping an eye on what happens in the next planning committee meeting where that is discussed. 5:08. Well, a Manxman living in Dubai says it feels like it's business as usual there despite the ongoing tensions in the area. Speaking to us on Saturday, Steve Noon, who is 4 miles from a US base in Dubai, says there has been action overhead, but currently he's not overly concerned.
Plenty of missile action overhead, but I must stress, you know, we're in a fantastic country and well looked after. And I think that if anyone has a Manx family, I wouldn't be overly concerned. It's 2026, and obviously it's not obvious, but there's targeted strikes in the region, and very accurate targeted strikes. But we are surrounded by US bases. Dubai's a base about 4 miles away from where I am now. So obviously you can sort of see these strikes, and more so the counter strikes on the missiles, which have been sort of deflected. Intercepted would be the correct wording.
In terms of on the ground, you know, are people, I know you said people, if you have Manx families, you shouldn't be too worried. So is there a feeling of safety on the ground then?
Yes, I would say so. At the moment, obviously there's strikes going all around, which is in the news and that. But I think sentiment here seems to be pretty business as usual, I would say. A lot of people just be working from home from next week, I would have thought. I'm just actually just up at the golf club close to my house. I'm about half a mile away, and you know, people just seem to be going along. I mean, people are just maybe their activities have been sort of staying more around home really, rather than going out and about. That seems to be the advice from the government anyway. So, but I don't think there's any. I don't feel like I'm in some sort of a war zone. You just happen to be 4 or 5 miles away from missile strikes, but seems to be missile interceptions, I'd say. And they seem to be going overhead, but as I said, they seem to be targeted at military positions, I believe.
That is Steve Noon, who lives in Dubai. On Breakfast Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the travel advice that there currently is for people expecting to go in or around that area. So do stay tuned for that one. It is just now 11 minutes past five. Well, a Northern Ireland politician is unhappy with new regulations which could result in the majority of its vessels being banned from fishing in Manx waters. Dave Moore is with me now with more details. So, Dave, what do we know about this?
Well, Beth, last month it seems there was a change in legislation regarding foreign crew working within the Isle of Man's 12-mile fishing zone. It regards those on UK skilled worker and transit visas who've been banned from operating in Manx waters. It's now only those on Isle of Man work visas that are available to Manx-registered businesses who are permitted to operate off the island's coast. Now, this has upset the Democratic Unionist Party's agriculture spokesperson, Michelle McElveen, and Dr. Lynn Gilmore, the chief executive of the Northern Ireland Fish Producers Organisation. They see this as a major setback for fishing vessels from the province.
So have we heard anything from the Isle of Man government about this?
I'll come to that in a second, Beth. I should say the Fish Producers Organisation, the NIFPO, they claim that over two-thirds of crew on Northern Ireland vessels are from overseas, so it'll have a huge impact on them. Now, when it was announced, the NIFPO say they reached out to the Isle of Man's Immigration Service to request clarification and received this response, and I quote, "Basically, the rules are a vessel is not permitted to fish commercially in Manx waters if any of the crew are operating under transit visas, as these do not permit the holder to undertake work or employment. Those crew members would have to apply for Isle of Man worker migrant visas. Any fishing in Manx waters by that crew would constitute an offence. The owner of the vessel would also be committing facilitation offences contrary to Section 25 of the Immigration Act 1971. Now, that's from the island's immigration compliance team, who also clarified that you cannot work in the Isle of Man on a UK skilled worker visa. To work in the Isle of Man, you must hold the relevant Isle of Man visa. The NIFPO say they were also shocked by the announcement, as it came out of the blue and they were just not expecting it. Meanwhile, we here at Manx Radio have reached out to the government, but we are yet to receive any response.
So then, Dave, what's next, or is this just the end of it?
Well, I understand Northern Ireland industry representatives have requested an urgent meeting with Manx officials, as this effectively prevents the boats from catching nethrops, which is effectively lobster, and scallop vessels. Whether that meeting's taken place yet, I don't know. But those exclusion would be within 12 nautical miles of the Manx coast.
So, in essence, this would seem like a win for the Isle of Man?
Well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? However, it's worth noting that the Northern Ireland vessel owners pay annually for the Isle of Man licences to ensure they can fish here legally. So that will be a chunk of revenue not going into the Manx government coffers. Plus, local businesses in the island could lose out, as it won't just be the Northern Ireland boats, but also English, Scots and Welsh, who won't be dropping their catch at our harbours if this legislation does remain in place. And it does remain to be seen whether the Isle of Man's smaller fleet would be able to supply to demand.
And just finally, Dave, remind me, you did mention politicians in Northern Ireland were involved in this.
Oh, yes, that's right, I did. The DUP's Michelle McElveen has called on Northern Ireland Fisheries Minister Andrew Muir to discuss the matter with the Isle of Man government. Whether that's happened, as I said earlier, we simply do not know. But we are hoping to speak to Dr. Lynn Gilmore of the NIFPO on Manx Radio later this week.
Dave, thank you very much indeed.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
So nothing specific on the police pages, which is always good news, but there are quite a lot of roadworks all around the island. So, for example, Port Sodric all this week, temporary lights in the old Castletown Road at the Marine Drive turn. That's for sewer work. In Peel, temporary lights at the top of Derby Road. That's between the swimming pool and Ballaquain, 24 hours a day for gas work. On the Ballymoder Strait between the Shoulder Road and St Mark's turn, 24 hours a day, there are lights there for waterworks. The Millennium Bridge is closing every night this week from 8 p.m. until 4 a.m. That's for maintenance. And a stretch of the TT course is going to be closed again tomorrow morning. That's between Belig Bridge and Lamfell. That's for tree felling around the Glen Helen area and also for work on a retaining wall. So that closure is in place every day this week from 9:30 until 3:30. And outside of that, there will be temporary lights in place at Black Dub for the work on the wall there. All okay down at the airport. The steam pack at the Maximum during a little bit later than usual this evening, getting in at 6:15, heading out again for Heysham at 7:45.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres. Call Quayside Tyres on 664417 to book your free vehicle's winter check so your vehicle is safe for you and other road users.
It is 16 minutes past five, and Douglas Council says its new social housing development in Willesden is everything it wants to achieve in one building. The local authority has spent £11 million on the new apartment block, which has 48 flats, and will take around 88 people off the waiting list. Well, council leader Devon Watson has been talking to local Democracy reporter Emma Draper and says the development will also make the housing stock more efficient by helping people downsize.
So you're never just building a building. What you're doing is you're building your community. And this is why whenever you build somewhere, you have to focus very carefully on its location. So there's playing areas in the back. We're going to be creating a wetland area that allows people to sort of interact a bit more with nature and gives kids exposure to that. Brand new playgrounds. But also right across the road, there's a bakery, there's a butcher's, and there's also a local business that deals with hair. So that's really great. And also there's a bus stop that can get people directly into town. So we've also really heavily invested in paths around Willesden to give people really good pedestrian access to walk toward town. This is also only a few minutes walk away from Nobles Park and main bus routes. So that's one of the core things you have to focus on, is when you build apartments, you're maximising the amount of value that you get out of the land.
So how much did it cost? And would you just explain how the funding has come from?
So this building costs £11 million, and it is some of the highest quality accommodation provided for social housing, not only in Alaman, but in much of the British Isles. But also what we see is this has the capacity to house at least about 88 people now, but also going forward, because this building isn't built toward that 60-year lifespan, it's going to be here in 100 years or longer. You're probably going to see thousands of people housed over the course of this building's lifetime, and that cost pays itself back over time. One thing I do want to address at the same time is that ratepayers don't pay for social housing. Social housing does receive a small contribution from Housing Deficiency Fund, but 85 to 90% of those funds are funded via the rents the tenants pay. So tenants are paying for this building themselves. And what we're going to be doing is we're going to be moving toward a system where a lot more of that cost is paid for by tenants long term, and in exchange they get much higher quality. And that, I think that it's a fair trade, and we've not had a single person complain about rent in this building, even though it is a lot higher, because they receive a lot more quality from this.
That is Douglas City Council leader Devon Watson there. 18 minutes past five here on Update, and the mover of the assisted dying bill here on the Isle of Man believes royal assent could be granted soon for the bills from the island and also Jersey as well. Now, last week, Jersey became the second part of the British Isles after us here to back giving people the right to choose to end their own life. Comparing those bills, Dr. Alex Allenson says there are slight differences, but they both have the same safeguards.
What Jersey have done is spend an awful lot of time through their parliament dealing with some of the details in aspects like the codes of practice, some of the training that's needed, and also the post-death reviews and the way that you have the right safety and the right requirements to prevent coercion and detect any evidence that people may have decided to have an assisted death through other means. Now, on the Isle of Man, our legislation is really quite comprehensive as well, but actually a lot of those aspects to it are left up to secondary legislation, are left up to further consultation with the people involved in assisted dying, such as the medical, nursing and pharmaceutical professions. So we have a lot of work that needs to be done and needs to come through Tim Wald as well in terms of secondary legislation, whereas in Jersey, they've put it in their primary legislation. This is part of the process of getting a decent, safe, and accessible assist the dying process. And I applaud what they've done in Jersey. Ours has been slightly different, but we still have the same safeguards.
You said you were going to try and arrange a meeting with David Lammy to see if you could get an update on our bill and what's been going on. Do you have any update for us?
I've had a response last week from Jake Richards, who looks after the relationship with the Crown Dependencies on behalf of the Ministry of Justice, saying that he didn't think a meeting was necessary because they'd had all the responses from the Department of Health and Social Care. We're now looking at those and looking at whether they could recommend the bill for royal assent. I think they've been given all the assurances about safeguards that we have in our bill. They will be doing exactly the same with Jersey. So I'm hoping that we can proceed to royal assent in the very near future and actually get to work with some of the necessary work we need to do in terms of the secondary legislation and also the consultation around the education, around the training, around further safeguards we need to bring this in for people for the Isle of Man.
That is Dr. Alex Allenson talking to Chanel Suku. Thank you for your text, Liz. That £11 million was actually for the Wollaston development, not the earlier Lord Street site that we were talking about at the start of the programme. 21 minutes past five. Well, the FC Isle of Man manager Rick Holden has again called on squad issues after his side conceded a stoppage time equaliser to Abbey Hay on Saturday. Despite taking the lead twice through Jacob Crook and Sean Kelly, the Ravens could only leave the ball with a point after Christopher Rogers levelled 7 minutes into added time. Rick Holden has been talking to the club's media.
The frustrating thing being a manager of this lot is you can't pick the same side twice. And you're very lucky if you do. And when we finally did, we beat the top of the league. And then, you know, we're suddenly three of our key players are off skiing and you have to rejig. I tried the same system, brought Big Sean back in from his injury and brought Will over to do a job in there. And I think, you know, he did very well, as did Big Sean. But we weren't as fluid as we normally are. And we stuttered a bit, but we still, I think, deserve to, you know, win the game. But we had to jig around, put Bestie in at right back as well, and then Josh come back in. He did all right, but it's just one of those things that we didn't score enough, obviously. Missed a couple of three chances, and Steve was adamant he wasn't offside. Someone told him he wasn't for the first goal, so that was disallowed. So anyway, we you know, he got a point.
Meanwhile, Holden also criticised the length of the season at the amateur level.
The whole season's a bloated mess anyway, in my opinion. It's too long, far too many games, far too much travel, and I think everyone's a bit punch drunk with it and knackered. There are solutions to it, but we've got, you know, we're still left with 10 games, 5 at home, 5 away, with virtually nothing to play for, apart from amassing a few points to look better and better. There is a bit of an Edwardian cricket team mentality going on, but I can't blame people wanting time off and a break from it, and it's just relentless. And it has been for me. I mean, you know, I've not had a break. I'm the only one that hasn't, by the look of it. I've booked my holidays immediately for when the season finishes, 2 days after, and then you won't see me for dust. I'll be on Jupiter, probably. So it is, it's wearing people down, but we've just got to see through and try and enjoy it and try and play some good football.
That's the Ravens manager not pulling any punches, that is Rick Holden there. So it's been a really good few weeks for local music because one group has seen their music feature in a new Disney Plus series. The duo Harvey, also known as Stu Waitrit and Carl Holden, has been celebrating one of their very first singles, Silver, getting worldwide exposure in the show Love Story. Carl has been chatting to Christy DeHaven.
I mean, I didn't realise, I didn't know much about the story. It's a very big, you know, I think in the US, the story itself is really famous. You know, it was this kind of very, like, fiery, very quick romance that kind of didn't end particularly well, I don't think. But it's kind of in the hearts of Americans that it's quite close. And I didn't realise that. But actually, I didn't realise also that it was set actually around exactly the time that we would have been recording this. It's like, it's kind of early 90s itself. And the soundtrack is really good. It's got some great tunes on there, you know, that would have been our favourites of the time.
That's incredible, isn't it? So as you said, it was the 90s when you recorded Silver, which I think you recorded it here on the Isle of Man, didn't you?
We did. We recorded it at Dave's studio.
So this was Dan Productions when it was on Victoria, on Woodburn Road, I think it was, wasn't it, when it was down there?
That's right, it was the old place.
Yeah, with Dave Armstrong.
Yeah, that's right. Back then, I think we were a little bit skint at the time, so I think we painted the back of his house as payment for the as payment for the session. And he played bass on it as well, and then Johnny Peacock played the drums on it. But I mean, I've said something on Facebook today. It's like, little did we know at the time when we were doing that 30 years later, it'd be on, you know, you'd be on the telly.
on American TV, on Disney,
on
and
American
everything.
Telly as well. Yeah,
no,
right.
So exciting.
But I mean, the song itself as well is like really, it's just a great song. I mean, it's so optimistic and kind of exciting itself. It's, and you know, with it being such an early one for us, yeah, it's just a lot of sort of good feelings about it. I mean, actually, interesting, just a quick stat for you. Last I looked at our Spotify kind of, you know, the artist kind of website you go on and you can have a look and you see how many times it's been played. And I think this week it's been played in about 140 different countries. So you can see all these things coming in, and it'd be just great if we can, obviously now there's a new song out as well, and hopefully people will land on the song and then they'll go and check out the rest of the stuff as well, which would be great.
Well, we wish you all the very best. For those who don't have Disney or Spotify, where else can they find Harvey and your music?
Apple Music, Spotify. I think we might have some stuff on SoundCloud as well. I should really know that, shouldn't I?
you can tell us. We'll put it online for you. Don't you worry. Well, all the very best. Give our love to Stu as well, and keep us posted on. You know, you're going to be turning up on red carpet soon, aren't you?
The Hall of Fame awaits.
That is Carl Holden, one half of the local group Harvey, talking to Christy. You can find all the details online. Update Sport is brought to you by the Print Shed, and this evening Darren Timpson. Fast am I, Darren.
Yeah, and starting in football, where all but one of the E-Cup FA Cup second round games have now been played. Peel and Rycott both progressed into the quarterfinals with wins over Paul Rose and St John's United. The Westerners made no mistake against the Douglas side as they scored 10 goals to head to the last eight. Peel and Rycott are now set to face each other in the next round following the draw. Elsewhere, Union Mills face Corinthians, St Mary's play Braddon, and the winner of Onken and Old Boys will set up a tie against Rushden United. Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Corinthians have extended their lead over Peel to 7 points after beating Ramsey 4-0 at the weekend. However, they have played three more games than their rivals. Corby also widened the gap to Castletown in the Arden and Drogon Division 2 with a 4-1 victory in the derby. They're now 4 points ahead of their neighbours. However, both teams have a sizeable gap to Rykop, who are outside of the playoff spots in third place. In rugby, where there was another derby, this time in the County 3 ADM Lancashire Cheshire, as Vagabonds beat Ramsey. Competing in the minor conference of the division, Vagas struck early, however Ramsey fired back with two quick tries to lead 10-7 at half-time. Unfortunately for the Northerners, though, they couldn't take advantage of their lead into the second 40 minutes as Vagabonds scored three unanswered tries to win 21-10. Elsewhere, Douglas were beaten away to Vale of Loon in the Regional 2 Northwest. They lost 26-17. And in the Hartford Homes Manx Shield, PDMS Southern Nomads beat Douglas Celt 36-17. And in hockey, the top two in the Ladies Premier League, Valcaise and Castletown, went face-to-face in a bid to take a crucial lead in the division as the competition crosses the halfway point. However, they struggled to break each other down and both teams had to settle for a 1-1 draw. Castletown are currently top of the table on goal difference with 15 compared to Valcaise 14.
Thank you very much indeed, Darren. Well, that is all from Update this evening. Thank you very much for your company. Check out the details of all tonight's top stories on the Manx Radio website. And Breakfast will be here with Ben from 6 tomorrow. Coming up next here on Manx Radio, it's Agenda with Phil Gorn talking about e-gaming legislation tonight. Then Greatest Hits with Chris Kinley is at 6. Time for Brass with Ian Cottier at 9. And Dave Moore will be here from 10 with After Hours. So have a lovely evening, and Update will be back at 5 tomorrow.